Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. In the divided kingdom, Israel in the north had been carried into captivity by the Assyrians. In the south, the prophet Jeremiah told Judah of God's coming judgment. Despite a clear warning, the people clung to their idols and did not repent. It's like that now in America. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Today, we continue a series on the Church in Babylon, unleashing the power of a Spirit-filled witness. Here is Dr. Lutzer with more of Babylon, Idolatry, and You.
There's another historical point that I must make. When you read Jeremiah, as I hope you will you keep in mind the difference between Israel and Judah? You know, after the time of Solomon, the kingdom was split, and you had the northern kingdom, which became known as Israel. And the capital was Samaria. That's where Ahab and others ruled. The southern kingdom was Judah, and the capital was Jerusalem. Now, we use Israel for the whole land. See, that's the confusion. So when you come across Israel, you know it's the northern kingdom. Do you know what happened to the northern kingdom? About 130 years before Jeremiah, the northern kingdom was taken, and they went off to Assyria. We sometimes call them the Lost Ten Tribes, though some people think that they aren't lost at all. But the northern kingdom was totally destroyed. The Assyrians took, I think if I remember correctly, I didn't look it up, about 27,000 people into Assyria. So that kingdom was destroyed. Samaritans came about because there were some Jews left, and they were mixed with Assyrians, and they were mixed blood. So you'd think that they would learn. Jeremiah refers to that and says, you know, your sister Israel, look at what happened to her. And the people said, it doesn't matter. We're joined to our idols. We don't want to hear what you have to say. Wasn't it Woody Allen who said that history has to repeat itself because we never learned the lessons of history the first time? And history does repeat itself. These people did not learn, and they didn't want to. They were joined to idols. Who wants to hear that, you know, that preacher of judgment? We want the false prophets. When I speak about the false prophets, I'll tell you what they were saying. Well, what are some of these characteristics of idolatry? First of all, idolatry is, and it was a day of divine judgment. You know, this is so difficult to preach. Do you realize that there are passages that I'll point out in a future message where God even says, don't pray for the people? He says, even if Noah were to pray, he said, I'm not going to relent. Because judgment is inevitable. He says it's like a boat caught in a mighty Niagara River, in our imagery, and you're going over the falls. It's too late now to turn back. I don't think America is at that point. I pray for America. But do you realize, folks, that considering what has happened in the last months and weeks and years, who knows whether we can turn it back? You say, well, where's the optimism? Well, hang in. There's lots of optimism. I just can't say everything in the introduction to the series. All right, now, what are some of the characteristics of idolatry? It's an exchange of gods. You know, it says in chapter 2, verse 5, what wrong did your fathers find in me the day they went from me and went after worthless and things and became worthless? What fault was there in me? It says in verse 11 of chapter 2, has a nation changed its gods, even though they are no gods? For my people have changed their glory for that which does not profit. Be appalled, O heavens, at this. Be shocked, be utterly desolate, declares the Lord. For my people have committed two evils. They've forsaken me, the fountain of living water, and hewn out cisterns for themselves, broken cisterns that can hold no water. Have you ever drunk from a fresh fountain that's bubbling up with some good water? Why would you then build a cistern to catch rainwater? Your cistern leaks, it's got cracks. The water is there for weeks on end and becomes brackish. I think that's the only time I've ever used this word brackish, but it fits here. You begin to drink it and you gag. Why would people do that? I mean, you know, you're abandoning the fresh water of God. Why go for a stream that has such a bad aftertaste? Well, we're going to hurry on and go to a second characteristic of idolatry that will answer that question. You must recognize that idolatry basically is to have a vision of God based upon desire, specifically sexual desire. Have you ever thought of why? Why this attraction to idols that Israel always has? You know, they're always running off with some other god, and you know, whether or not it's Hosea and all these prophets are talking about the fact that on the mountains and the hills they had these shrines. What is attractive about that, may I ask? It's because of the pagan gods, Baal. The pagan gods were very tolerant when it came to sexuality. You know, you read this, for example, in chapter 2, it says, verse 20, "For long ago I broke your yoke and burst your bonds, but you said, 'I will not serve.' Yes, on every high hill and under every green tree you bowed down like a whore." Says the very same thing in chapter 3. You can read it there yourself, verse 2 and following. You see, it was not only spiritual adultery that the people were committing in turning from the living water to the broken cisterns, the brackish water, but they were sexually immoral. And these pagan gods were very tolerant of whatever sexuality you wanted. And the problem with that tolerance, which offers so much and which promises freedom, the problem with that tolerance is it brought so much baggage. And when you drink from that fountain, you gag because of the guilt and because of the broken relationships and because of the emptiness and because of the sense of destruction of who you are and the self-respect that you should have as a person. All of those consequences are huge, but the problem is you're bonded to these idols. So you keep drinking from the bitter fountains that can hold no water. But you keep going back again and again and again. You see, that's the problem with different views of God. I have books in my library where people have totally redefined God in accordance with human desire, whatever it is. In fact, there was a book written, it just comes to mind as I'm preaching, Conversations with God. By the way, did you know that that book was written by a demonic spirit? I read it maybe about 10 years ago, but the author said that as he was writing, a spirit came along and basically dictated it. And basically what God said is, "I am whoever you want me to be." Well, isn't that ever great? Do you know that it was Huxley who said the reason that we accepted evolution without a lot of proof is because we didn't want a God to interfere with our sexual mores? That was Huxley. In other words, get God off our back so that we can be free. But the freedom comes with a huge price of bondage, and you end up choking on those fountains. It's a hard lesson to learn, isn't it? Now, the thing is that, you remember the story, told it maybe 10 years ago, when you've been here as long as I have, you sometimes lose a little bit of track of time, about the man who was driving through a farmyard and he noticed that on the barn there were a bunch of targets, and right smack in the middle of each target there was an arrow. So he stopped to commend the farmer for being such an expert marksman. The farmer said, "What you saw out there wasn't done by me. It was done by a village boy who is somewhat mentally challenged. He comes out here, he shoots arrows into my barn, and then he paints the targets around them." That's what society does. I want to do what I want to do. I want to live the way in which I want to live. And God will come along and make it all right and agree with me. Very famous pornographer, whose name I will not mention, was interviewed. And I remember reading the interview in which he says, "My God doesn't have a problem with what I do." You see, it used to be when I was younger, it used to, the bumper sticker said, "If it feels good, do it." Now, the bumper sticker should say, "If it feels good, believe it." So what we have is a God who comes along and justifies everything that we want to do. Third characteristic of idolatry is willful self-deception. Willful self-deception. Now, here in the text, they say, for example, in verse 23, as they are trying to justify themselves. By the way, notice in verse 22, you know, of course, that I am in chapter 2. It says, "Though you wash yourself with lye and use much soap, the stain of your guilt is still before me." How do you think they're washing themselves? They're washing themselves with self-justification. They're talking among their friends and they're saying, "Well, everybody does it. How could this be wrong?" And so they're trying to cleanse their consciences, but it's not working very well. "How can you say, 'I am not unclean? I've not gone after the Baals. Look at your way in the valley and know what you have done. Restless like a young camel running here and there, a wild donkey used in the wilderness in her heat, sniffing the wind.'" And you know what the prophet goes on to say? You go out looking for sin. It's not just that sin comes to you, but you go cruising, trying to find it, running toward the sin and not away from it. That's where your heart really is. That's what the prophet happens to be saying. Wow. And then he says in verse 26, "As a thief is shamed when caught, so the house of Israel shall be shamed, they, their kings, and so forth." I'll tell you what he's saying there. And think about this. Anything that you and I are doing, which if it were exposed would be shameful, is something that we already know intuitively is wrong. You know, a boy might be sleeping with his girlfriend, totally justified, you know, because two can live more cheaply than one, and yada, 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 and on it goes. But when he's exposed, there is embarrassment and there is shame. Why? Because intuitively, you know that it's wrong. And these people going to the hills and to the mountains and saying that we are worshiping these other gods, they knew down deep that they were not able to wash their souls from the stain of guilt. Well, this is Pastor Luther. Thank you so much for joining us today for Running to Win. And what we're going to be doing is looking at the book of Jeremiah, seeing its relevance, and then, of course, also some messages from the book of Daniel. But the point is that just as Israel was in Babylon, surrounded by paganism, in the very same way we find ourselves today in the same situation. That's why I want you to call your friends, invite them to listen to Running to Win, and we'll find out how to live in the midst of a pagan culture. And in a moment, you'll be given information as to how these messages can be yours.
Dr. Erwin Lutzer with more of Babylon, Idolatry, and You. The first message in a series on the Church in Babylon, unleashing the power of a Spirit-filled witness. Next time, the lessons America must learn. The Church in Babylon is a 10-part series on CD, and we'd like to send you that series as our thank you for a gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw.com. Or write to Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. This is Dave McAllister. Running to Win is a ministry of the Moody Church.